This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 16th of September, 2021. At the top of the show, want to underline and highlight that we have a webinar with our head of fixed income strategy, Altea Spinozzi. She will be out presenting that webinar at 11 o'clock GMT, 1300 CET. You can see the little blurb here on slide two of today's slide deck. You can also find the signup page, webinars.saxo. Pop that into your browser. It'll take you to the correct URL. I'm sure she'll be covering everything you need to know about sovereigns and what is going on there as we're transitioning, I think, probably into an interesting phase in Q4, especially with the U.S. debt ceiling debate, which we haven't refreshed in a while, and we'll have to get back to that next week. I think there's so much else going on, but do tune in for that, and there is a recording available about a day after the actual live session at which you can do sort of interactive Q&A, et cetera. All right, Peter, we had a session yesterday where we finally saw a bit of a bounce back. We had those highlighted those trend support levels yesterday. I put those up on slide three and really bolded the sort of 55-day moving average there. Clearly, one of the support levels people looking at here. And a couple of trend lines, it depends where you draw them. The more tight one is the upper trend line there. So some support coming in. I emphasized yesterday that this sell-off has been slightly different in nature than those previous 4 months and that we've sort of grinded lower for about 5 or 6 days. It's actually 6 days before this bounce. What's your take here? I mean, the bounce is a little bit modest relative to the size of the sell-off and the direction change, not quite as violent as some of those previous ones. And we do have quadruple witching up tomorrow.
Yeah, I read one of the big one of the biggest market makers in the US. They had an interesting analysis out the other day, which I read, and what they're basically saying is that whenever you have a drawdown of a 2-3%, 4% this year, retail investor flow accelerates massively, and you can see retail investors coming in and buying the dip. So this concept of buying the dip is actually quite ingrained in markets right now. It has reinforced itself because it has become a winning strategy. And that's typically how markets evolves. It's just like almost evolutionary. You have a strategy that wins, people double down on it, and it just continues until it doesn't, right? Until it unravels and hurt a lot of people. But for now, we had another session here where we had the rebound, a lot of bids coming in. Retail were definitely part of the mix. I would still, my takeaway, if you look at the theme baskets, John, on slide three, I mean, you have the commodity sector was up almost 1.5%, up still almost 20% for the year. I still think that's the beacon for me because it relates to so many things on the inflation side, which is the most important question of this post great financial crisis era, which have been all about ever falling interest rates, and now we are at a high point on so many different indicators, especially equity valuation. And to me it just seems that inflation is the thing in the world that has the key to unlock everything and reset a lot of things in the financial market. So that's why I'm really focusing on this commodity sector. And then China, maybe not a big surprise, the worst performing theme basket again, yet again. And we have to mention, John, that we have Country Garden coming into the mix now as one of the largest developers in China, also under some stress. The share price is down quite considerably, together with Evergrande, which has its onshore bonds suspended for trading this morning as it was downgraded. And I just put in this headline from August 24th. We are on slide six, sorry. China's largest developer sees profit rebound with curbs. So this was the headline on the Country Garden's half-year results. So, I mean, think about it. It's only 3 weeks ago they reported actually quite strong results. And now their share price is really under pressure. And you're seeing the housing market under really severe stress in China. The technology clampdown is still continuing. They also now clamping down pretty hard on Macau. There was a big meeting the other day where some of the key operators in Macau said that this island, this casino island, will never get back to where it was, never, period. So basically said to any investor, just sell your casino stocks because there's not going to be any business. So China is under pressure here.
Yeah, and there's even the narrative developing, and this is not my narrative, but it's one of these things that's out there in the ether the idea that to some degree, whatever fallout from this can be used by this new direction in the leadership to point out the dangers of capitalism and underline policy moves in that direction, which you would think, all other things being equal, is going to be risky for capital flows into China. It's one of the world's largest financial markets, obviously. So this is a really key. There's so much at stake here besides the Evergrande story specifically.
Yeah, interesting things happening in China, John. But another interesting market, which all have been talking a lot about, is what's going on in Europe. We have electricity prices, natural gas prices soaring to levels we have not seen in it probably ever. And it's also, it pulled crude oil higher yesterday as well, because the natural gas equivalent price into crude oil prices is now hit a level where it will begin to be a gravitational force and pull oil prices higher. But I've put in on slide four the base load, which is the benchmark electricity price in Germany, and there was clearly an illiquidity event happening over the past couple of days. Market makers were just stepping out of the market. We had two of the big hydro dams in Norway not producing what it used to. There was just a lot of stress in the system, but now it seems like we have come back. So maybe some of the worst is probably over, although you have a lot of factories around Europe that have simply closed down. You have big fertilizer plants in the UK that basically just shut down production at the current levels.
Wow. And you know, who can't sort of have timed it any better, but our comment yesterday, I think, being sort of or on the possible narrative here, that some of this is around, at least the natural gas side of things, around this whole issue of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline and whether Russia is set to open that up. There is a German election, no secret, coming up in 10 days, and we talked about that. And just almost on cue, yesterday, with this crazy spike happening intraday, we have put the quote from a tweet from Walter Bloomberg, Delta One. He's a good follow, by the way, for live news. Slide five. The Kremlin says that a quick launch of Nord Stream 2 would balance gas prices in Europe, including on spot markets. So there you have it. It's almost, you almost can't make it up, the timing there. And it's pretty obvious that, of course, they would like this at these prices, especially to open up this pipeline for sales into Europe. And certainly if it was a solid amount of gas flowing through that pipeline and, you know, supporting what's coming through the pipeline from the rest of Russia under Ukraine, et cetera, this would certainly, at least for the near term, get this situation under control. The question is how quickly the deal can be set up to get the gas flowing, and to what degree winter weather and current low storage levels are a factor in setting the agenda there. But of course, as you mentioned, Peter, when you have actual on the demand side, once prices get to a certain level, there are certain things that simply shut down. Let's look a little bit at FX here. I think it's quite interesting what we saw yesterday in the Japanese yen. So following through to the strong side, a lot of this was on the back of that weaker than expected US CPI report. Mentioned sterling in yesterday. Today, pulling up dollar yen, and really a very interesting level coming into view, this 109, 109.10 area. It doesn't really fit with the narrative of Japanese equities going crazy. We did see a small correction overnight, largely probably because of this little yen strengthening move here, but it doesn't fit with that narrative that we're sort of seeing some echo of the 2012 election and the advent of Abenomics and really Kurodonomics with the massive central bank moves back in April 2013. But just would note that the market is heavily short the Japanese yen. Got a couple of key event risks coming up, the unknown timing, but fairly short timing to the Japanese election itself. And then the next week, the FOMC meeting on Wednesday. So with that twitchy level sort of coming into view and a heavily Japanese yen short market, I wonder if there might be some room for shenanigans. Certainly the yen quite strong as well. So we can see the dollar firming this morning, but the yen quite strong as well in some of the crosses like that sterling yen, euro yen. So keep an eye on that. And then rounding out FX, another story, and we're getting it from two angles overnight. Australia versus New Zealand, where we have a huge Q2 GDP print out of New Zealand, 3.8% quarter on quarter, way more than expected, over 17% year on year. The key being in the response, so the market taking 2-year rate expectations, 2-year swaps, another 8 basis points higher to new highs for the cycle. This is stretching even wider that yield spread to Australia. And we're seeing Aussie Kiwi coming under fresh pressure. Look at the weekly chart on slide 8. You can see it's quite a remarkable and persistent run here, but you can also see that flatline level is basically the support you've seen in Aussie Kiwi, save for the chaotic weeks of the pandemic when the market tends to be more heavily positioned in Aussie around these panic events. For whatever reason, during panics, Aussie Kiwi seems to sell off. That happened back in the financial crisis as well. So we're entering a zone that, and with the final run being towards parity, and I think if we start getting anywhere close to there, you're going to see an RBNZ that starts to get on the warpath on currency strength. And then on the Australian side, you did see a record low unemployment rate overnight, but at the same time, you're seeing a massive negative payrolls drop, minus 150K. That's a huge number for an economy the size of Australia. You see a little bit what's going on the small insert chart I put there on slide 8, where you can see the hours worked are dropping. This is because of lockdowns. People are sitting at home. They're not able to engage in the service economy. And the actual employment rolls are dropping as well, which means that the unemployment rate is only going down because of a smaller participation rate. So they firmly need to get on the other side of this Delta variant outbreak. I think that's going to happen in Q4. We have spring and summer arriving. We have a massive vaccination, mobilization, and rollout coming. I'm sure Australia is so sick of it. I imagine the uptake will be quite high, and they expect they can get to their target of at least anybody willing and able to get a vaccination should be vaccinated by around December 1st. So I'm suspecting we're shaping up for quite a significant Q4 low. John, in Aussie Kiwi. Yeah.
I think we should mention as well that a news came over the terminal here from China. They say that they have now fully vaccinated over 1 billion people. And China, given the slowdown they had in August because of the Delta variant and their very strict policy measures against this pandemic, I think this should be, you know, interpreted as something positive as well, right? I mean, it's, as you say, if we get a large part of the Asia Pacific vaccinated, and that's where we're really critically needed, because that's where all we have all the bottlenecks, basically.
Yes. It's
especially in Thailand, Indonesia, Malaysia, Vietnam, all these tier two countries around China, which is the main manufacturing hub, but they also supply very critical components into the Chinese supply chain, which then ship it off to Europe and the US. So it is so critical for growth to hang in there and continue at a high pace.
Yeah, and so we'll be seeing to some degree some catch up in supply chains as well, though that process could prove far more extensive and drawn out than some would like, for that to be the case. And that leads us really to today's calendar, which is the August recent retail sales out of the U.S. So again, we're still in the hangover from the huge additional stimulus push we saw, with the last one being in March of those stimulus checks. We're at the cusp of the September timeframe, where we almost inevitably, I would suspect, we'll see a drop in sales because we have unemployment benefits rolling off. Although there's the narrative that because these unemployment benefits rolled off at the beginning of September, you're going to see people moving to wherever the jobs are in the economy, because there are plenty of open positions. Regardless, two things I want to pull out that I think are really critical as a setup for next week's FOMC meeting. Retail sales, not so much. Of course, it's interesting. If it's exceptionally negative or positive, it could further juice up the price action. But I think really the more interesting one is the preliminary September run at the University of Michigan sentiment, and not so much the sentiment number itself, but the inflation expectations, because this survey is one of the ones that the Fed uses in the inflation expectations component of its model. And if this is running to new highs for the cycle, especially for that longer term inflation expectation part of the survey, there's one for 5 to 10 years and there's one for 1 to 3 years, I believe. If that's happening, I think that sets up, we may be set up for it anyway, but I think that adds to the pressure and likelihood of a more hawkish than expected FOMC meeting next week. So people may have been a little bit blindsided or sidetracked down the wrong impression of things by that CPI number, if we're seeing inflation expectations becoming a little bit less anchored in this survey. So I'll be watching that one closely ahead of the FOMC meeting. We also have a Canadian election. It seems the market doesn't believe there's a whole lot at stake over this, but we'll refresh our views on Canada as well. For now, we're going to call it a day. Let's see where things stand as we look ahead to tomorrow as a setup and running into a big FOMC meeting week next week. Be safe out there. We'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.